Welcome back to the Dealmakers Podcast Show with serial entrepreneur Alejandro Cremades, best-selling author of The Art of Startup Fundraising and co-founder at Panthera Advisors. In this podcast, we ask our guests about their successful acquisitions and financing rounds.
Alrighty, hello everyone and welcome to the Dealmakers Show. So today we have a really amazing founder, you know, that has been going from one industry to another. And then I think that the story, his story, you know, is quite inspiring. We're going to be learning about building, scaling, also exiting, you know, because he took one of his companies public and he did very well there. I think it was like a 15x for investors, so not bad. We're going to be talking about how he transitioned from bad student to good student, trying to raise money, especially in, let's say, like a segment that is a little more limited in education and misinformation, like the segment of cannabis, as well as, for example, taking the immigrant community to the next level. So without further ado, let's welcome our guest today, Bassem Hanna. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure to be on.
So originally born in Egypt, but you were raised in Canada. So walk us give us a walk through memory lane. How was life growing up?
So thankfully, I have two amazing parents who loved and cared for us throughout our whole childhood. Growing up as an immigrant, coming from Egypt to Canada is a little challenging, as most immigrants will know. You either struggle yourself or you watch your parents struggle. And that was a very, that was a story and a experience that resonates and that I went through. It taught us hard work. It taught us that material things are nice to have, but not need to have. But more importantly, it gave me like hustle and grind. Like I knew what I didn't have when I was younger. I was very well aware of that. And I don't know if it's just me or if it's everybody else, but I always wanted what I didn't have. Like I wanted more and I knew I wanted it. And I knew the only way that I was going to get it was to like work hard. No one was going to give this stuff to me. It took me a little while to realize that. But once I did, I realized that I could turn that passion, that energy into fuel that can take you to very far places.
So then how was that for you experience of seeing your parents, you know, going through the struggle too of being immigrants, you know, the unknown for them, the uncertainty? I'm sure that shaped who you are today.
For sure, man. Like, listen, it's tough. My mom is a doctor by training. My dad is an engineer. And watching them come to Canada and start working jobs like factory line worker or cashier at McDonald's, it's not easy to see. You can see what it does to them in terms of their psyche. You know, like they have a level of confidence that they come from their home country with. And then you start to see them have to accept less. But what that does for you is it teaches you hard work. It teaches you that no job is beneath you. You got to do what you got to do to get by. But in that, I also watched them take themselves from, you know, here to here. I watched them go from factory worker at McDonald's or factory worker at a car assembly plant, to a licensed professional engineer doing what he used to do, which was civil engineering. I saw my mom go from McDonald's cashier to doing all of her licensing, basically taking 8 years to become a doctor again and becoming a licensed physician again. And watching the transition from, you know, here to here, not that there's anything wrong with those jobs that I just mentioned, but watching them elevate themselves and like kind of go against the grain and work hard and like, and set out and do what they set out to accomplish. It teaches you grit. It teaches you mental strength. And also like it makes you realize that love is probably the most important thing that you can have in a family. And self-determination and grit, they'll get you very, very far.
So in your case, obviously in high school, you were not really pumped about going to class and being a good student. But then there was a shift that happened there from high school to college. What was that shift?
In high school, I definitely cared more about being a cool kid or trying to make friends or impress people. In my household, like as most, at least most immigrants from my community will tell you, going to university is not an option. You have to go, or like some level of higher education. But when it came time to apply, I didn't have the marks. So I ended up getting into a school that maybe wasn't my first choice. The minute I got into university, though, I was like, okay, something clicked in me, and I'm like, I'm very close to becoming a real life adult. You know, when you're in high school, you're like, I don't need to worry about my future, my career, whatever. But when I transitioned into university, I was like, shit, I'm very close to being responsible for myself. And I didn't want to rely on my parents too much. I saw what they'd already given me so much. I didn't want to be a burden on them after that. So I said, you know what? I'm going to start applying myself. Like up to that point, I was probably a mid to high 70s student. So like a B+ student. And I'm like, I'm just going to try. I've never really tried. I've always been like, if I try, I'm going to do well. But I'm like, prove it, do it. So first university assignment comes in. I try, I get 100%. You know, second one, exam, whatever. I'm scoring 99s, 100s. I'm like, wow, like I got something here. Like, is this all it took for me to like prove it to myself? My confidence gets higher. I start to realize, I'm like, maybe I don't want to, like, maybe I can do more than what I had originally planned for myself. And my university career was that opportunity for me, that's when I realized, I'm like, okay, I want to do more. I want to squeeze everything I can out of this life. So I just shifted my mentality completely. It wasn't about just getting things done. It was doing them the best that I could. You know, my mom always left me with the saying, do your best and leave the rest up to God. And up to that point, she would always ask me if I didn't do as well as I wanted. She'd be like, did you do your best? Answer that honestly. And everybody has to answer that honestly for themselves. And once I started answering that honestly for me, I realized I wasn't trying my best. I was leaving something on the table. And I was like, for what? Like, if I don't try, sometimes you don't get the opportunity twice. So try your best and see what happens. And when I did, I ended up leaving that school to go to a different business school. And I graduated from that business school. Again, I tried my best there and I did really well. I got a very good job in management consulting at a firm called Boston Consulting Group, which kind of like platformed my career in a completely different trajectory than I was going in anyways. And then from there, I realized that management consulting wasn't for me. I want to get into real estate. I want to be an owner, not a consultant. So I made the transition into industry, where I started working at real estate development shops. I worked for a publicly traded real estate company, and then I worked for a real estate private equity company. And then at 26, I decided to start my own business.
So obviously, you know, like we'll talk about the real estate, you know, business, and because I mean that's something that you've been doing for quite a while. Now, one thing that I want to ask you is during your real estate career, and we're going to be finishing, you know, the story today with how that has transitioned to on the real estate side. But before doing so, I want to talk about that break, you know, kind of thing that you took, or that different segment that you decided to tackle, you know, besides real estate, and that was cannabis. So how did the whole thing around cannabis, you know, the whole idea, the whole concept, you know, come knocking, and why did you think about taking action there? Because it was a completely unknown industry to you. I mean, you were doing real estate. So how did the whole cannabis thing come about?
Funny story, the real estate industry was actually the reason I got into cannabis. So I started my real estate business in 2011. I bought my first property in 2011, 2012, my 2011, my second in 2012, and my third in 2013. My third property, I did a closing dinner with my lawyers to celebrate my real estate win. And I was just shooting, like having conversation with them during dinner. And I was like, hey, what does your husband do for a living? She's like, actually, he's quitting his job in the University Health Network, which is like a big hospital system in Toronto, to get into medical cannabis. I was like, what's medical cannabis? Like, you know, like I was a weed smoker in high school and university. Not that I condone that at all. It's not good for young minds to do that. I was like, something sparked in me. And I was like, okay, if this is real, this is once in a lifetime opportunity, you know? So I went home, I started Googling, I'm like, legalization of medical cannabis in Canada. And I realized that Canada was going to be the first country in the world to federally legalize medical cannabis. And they were well on their way to making it recreationally legal, probably later in their life, later in a few years. And we were in 2013 and the legislation was coming out in 2014. So all of like my business school knowledge, like first mover advantage and being a market leader and all that stuff start to click in. I'm like, man, I think this might be a once in a lifetime opportunity for me to get in at the ground level of what is going to be a really big industry. So I took that factory, that industrial building, that building that I bought in 2013, and I talked to my investors and I'm like, hey, we were supposed to do self-storage here. I know it's crazy, but what if I propose that we do a medical cannabis factory here? You know, like here's my business plan and here's why I think we should do it. And thankfully they said yes. Reluctantly they said yes, but they said, you know what? If we believe in you, and there's obviously merit to this idea if it's real, so we'll go along for the ride. So we took that factory, and what we ended up doing was building one of the first cannabis production facilities in the world of scale. We then, like as most people know, in 2016, 2017, the market started to boom in cannabis, especially in public markets. So we decided to take our company once it was licensed and we took it public. And then we started to scale the operation and it absolutely took off. You know what? I was 28 when I started that business. And by 30, I was the CEO of a $1 billion publicly traded medical and recreational cannabis facility that operated in both Canada and the US. And it was a wild experience. And what we thought was best for us as myself and our investment group was to bring in more professional, more senior seasoned management at that point to take the realm from me, because I was honestly a little bit over my head. I was making decisions and at orders of magnitude that were starting to get a little bit scary for me. So I thought, you know what, I could use the help right now. And this is probably a good time for me to take a step back and just enjoy the win. And so that's what I did. In 2018, I sold the controlling stake of our business to a US private equity firm led by a gentleman named Jason Wild, who's an amazing human and still a good friend. And he took the company from here and took it to the next level. I think to give you numbers, all of us and all of our investors got in at around like 40 to 60 cents a share. When we took the company public, it popped to like $4 or $5 a share. And then under Jason's ownership, where we still owned our shares, it went up as high as $18 a share.
Wow.
Yeah. So it was a good ride.
Hey guys, so pardon the interruption here. So I got to tell you that, you know, for those of you that are either looking to raise money or you're looking to get your company acquired, you don't have to be alone. You know, there's a lot of psychology that needs to be blended with strategy, with methodology, with process. And it's very hard, and already doing your business alone is super, super difficult. So I remember, you know, back then when I was an entrepreneur, I kept really experiencing the challenge of either knowing or finding the right type of access to the right type of investors, or really understanding what was the right type of guidance, you know, that would carry me through the process, whether it was with seeking money or with going through the acquisition. So that gap that I found being an entrepreneur is ultimately what pushed me later on when I met my co-founder at Pantera, Mike Severson, to really put together an advisory firm where we are guiding entrepreneurs and founding teams through the capital raising efforts, whether you are at a seed stage or at a Series A stage, or if you are going through the process of an acquisition and you are in small to mid-cap type of a cycle. So again, you know, we would help you from guiding you and supporting you from A to C all the way to the end as an extension of your team. And there's no reason for you to do this alone. So with that being said, if you would like to find out more, feel free to send me an email at alejandro@panteraadvisors.com. And we would love to take a look at helping you out.
That is unbelievable. What do you think, propelled, that crazy ride? Because I think that at the peak of the valuation, it was like about $2.5 billion. So that's pretty amazing. So what do you think propelled for that to happen like that?
It was probably the news cycle. There was a moment in time in 2019 when people were very confident that U.S. federal legalization was going to happen. And if and when that happens, I'm confident that TerrAscend, which trades at probably around $1 billion right now, will go back up to $2.5, $3, $4, $5 billion. It's like, just to give you context, TerrAscend is probably a top three global cannabis producer. It does roughly $300 million US of annual revenues on like 50% margins. So there's a real business there. The thing that made it go super high was the fact that people thought that the U.S. government was going to legalize sometime soon. And since then, the Republicans got into power. They're not super into legalization of cannabis. The Democrats haven't really done anything with their presidency right now. So I think it'll continue. At some point, it'll go back up when federal legalization becomes a real thing. But I think that's what originally propelled it to its super highs.
So then eventually, you end up doing the transaction. And now you have obviously, some liquidity in your pockets, which it never hurts, right?
Yeah.
Going back to what you were saying earlier, you did real estate in all types of shapes and forms. And you started, on your own. Initially with a real estate fund, and that has kind of like developed more into now what it is, more on the residential, development of high rises. So can you talk to us like what that sequence of events have happened there on the real estate side too with this other company?
Yeah, for sure. So in Almega, what we originally started off as, and maybe I'll preface as to why we started, because I think the why is important. I come from an immigrant community, what I realized is that most immigrants, especially first and like one generation and 1B generation, which is me, I came with my parents when I was five. I'm technically an immigrant, but I'm very Canadian. What I realized is that we are incredibly unorganized, in the way that we treat our financial literacy and our financial capacity. There's so many of us. But we never pool our money together. We never do anything to propel us to the next level. We're always guys investing in RRSPs or money managers or whatever, but we're not doing the private equity style deals, which is something that I got accustomed to seeing when I worked for really big real estate companies and real estate private equity firms. So my original pitch for Almega was, hey, community, we don't do this right, but I work for people who do, and there's nothing stopping us from doing this ourselves, but for organizations. So why don't we pool our money together and start buying bigger real estate assets than we could do alone? And let's see what kind of returns we can earn as a group versus what we can earn alone. So when we originally started, we were trying to jump off the ground floor, right? So, we would buy old apartment buildings, we would renovate them, and we would hold them for cash flow. And we did that from 2011 all the way up until 2020. And what we ended up doing was demonstrating or proving our thesis. We said we bought property, we earned our cash flow, we distributed cash flow to ourselves, and then we 2 and 3x'd our money over that time period, depending on when we sold the individual properties. So we showed that it worked. We showed that real estate as a group works. We showed that we have the power and the ability to organize ourselves and level up. And then we took that, and with a little bit more money in our pockets from the cannabis transaction, because it was the same group that did the real estate with me that did the cannabis transaction. And we said, okay, well, the next layer of thing that we can do in real estate is to start doing development, right? Like buying old apartments gives you a certain spread. Doing development gives you a bigger spread. And again, it was the same thesis. It's like, we have the ability in-house to do these things. We just have to believe in ourselves and we have to be organized, right? To my immigrant community and to every immigrant community out there, like, our goal is to establish roots and to set ourselves and our next generations up so that we can be successful in the countries that we immigrate to, right? That takes differentiation from probably the models that our parents had in their heads when they came in. You know, most people come in and they're like, I'm just going to protect my little nest egg and I'm going to do whatever. The idea of working together and doing big, like corporations and being the biggest and baddest usually doesn't enter their head because they're just trying to survive, right? But I'm fortunate because I get to see, I saw my parents do that, but I have hunger and I have drive and I believe in what we can do if we work together. So that's the why.
One thing that I wanted to ask you here, you know, is also the, you guys have raised quite a bit of money. I mean, you guys have raised close to 50 million. And as you were talking about the why too, I want to ask you, you know, if you were to, let's say, go to sleep tonight and you wake up in a world where the vision, you know, what you guys are up to is fully realized, you know, with really taking the immigrant community to the next level, what would that world look like?
I think from a metrics perspective, we would be the largest owners and operators of real estate in whatever communities we sit in. We would own and operate rental buildings. We would own and operate commercial plazas. We would own and operate industrial buildings where we are collecting rent and making passive income while watching our real estate appreciate. And at a scale that would be hard to replicate if you pulled out all of the immigrant dollars that make these things possible. That's truly what I think it would look like. That's the vision I have. And more importantly, I think once you put money in that type of person's hand, you will watch your economies grow because there's a certain, like I said, like, you know, the mentality that I saw growing up, that is not unique to me. That is every person that has watched their parents struggle or has been through a struggle themselves. So you combine that and you pool that. And then all of a sudden you're saying, okay, here's a release valve. Here's some money now. Like, you're going to watch your economies grow 2-3x like what they are now because these people are hungry, right? So like, I think it's better for us as a community. It'll be better for you as an individual. It'll be better for us as communities, and it'll be better for the countries that we live in as a whole.
So then in this case, you know, I want to ask you to, like, how is it different now that you've been able to raise money in two different industries, completely different, right? In cannabis, I mean, you guys raised like about 80 million bucks prior to the IPO. And then here, you know, you've raised close to 50 million. What have you gotten from raising money? Because, I mean, now you've done it in different industries. So what is your take?
If there is a will, there is a way. Right. When in every industry that I've gone into, I've been met with opposition and resistance at the very beginning. And you can power through that. Right. With every individual conversation that I have, that I start to realize the strength of what you can do as a person and what we can do together. So my take is that things that used to scare me before don't scare me anymore. Big numbers do not scare me. And to anybody listening, they shouldn't scare you either. If you have a big, bold vision, I will give you a saying that one of my mentors tells me all the time when I tell him crazy ideas. He's like, well, you know, how do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time, right? So just do the thing in front of you that you know you can do, that's in your control. Don't worry about everything else for right now. That'll come later, but just accomplish, like, break it up into little goals and then do it. But my take is anything is possible. If I can do it, literally anybody in the world can do it. That's what I believe.
So then now, you know, like, we've been talking about the future too earlier, and I want to talk about the past, but do so with a lens of reflection. If you were to go into, let's say, a time machine and go back in time, you know, maybe to that time where you were, you know, about to make the switch here and get to become an entrepreneur at 26. Let's say if you were able to have a chat with that younger, you know, self and give your younger self one piece of advice for launching a business, what would that be and why, given what you know now?
The piece of advice I would give to myself at 26 was, don't be afraid of scale. When I first started, I hindered myself more than anybody else did to me. You know, the reason I didn't buy 50 and 100-unit apartments was not because I couldn't raise the equity. I probably could have, but it was because I thought, well, I need to do it small first and then do it big, right? To myself, I probably could have saved myself a few years and instead of raising 50 million at year 12 or 13, whatever we're at right now, I probably could have been like 2 or 3x that, but it was in my own head. I kind of psyched myself out. So I would say to my younger self, like, don't sweat it. The difference between you and the guys that do it at a big scale is not much, if anything, except for the fact that my perception of them was higher than my perception of myself, which is no longer the case.
So what's that shift in? What does that look like? Because I mean, I'm sure that there's a lot of people that are listening, and I couldn't agree more with you. I mean, I find that ultimately you are your own challenge, right? Like, that person that you're looking in front of the mirror is who is stopping you. So how do you avoid that from happening? I mean, what does that shift look like?
I'll tell you, for me, I learned it the hard way, right? It was actually the cannabis business that changed my perspective, right? Because the cannabis business, in real estate, there are giants. There are guys that have billions and trillions of dollars under management. And like, to try to compare yourself to them from where I was standing, it was very hard. But when I got into cannabis, everybody was on ground level. And when I was competing against guys that had maybe done successful, that had been successful in other industries and were trying their luck at cannabis, and we were at the same level, and I found myself winning or competing or staying the same with them. And then I became the guy that had the billion-dollar company. I became the guy that was like the one that people were looking up to and asking to reach out to and whatever. I was like, man. And then I started meeting my peers and my counterparts. I'm like, we're all the same, man. Everybody's struggling. Everybody puts their pants on one leg at a time. Everybody has stresses at work. Everybody has stresses at work. No one is perfect. Everybody has like their own nuances and quirks that make them insecure. The winners are the ones that know how to put that away and believe in themselves, right? They believe, like, when it's time to perform, you perform. And then you go back to being that your same normal weird self that we all are. But when it's time to do the work, when it's time to like take the chips off the table, they are confident in what they do. They are like, okay, give me this. This is mine. And I will fight you, not literally, but I will fight to protect what I believe is mine. And I think once you have that mentality, that switch, whatever way that you get it, you become unstoppable.
I love it. So, Bassem, for the people that are listening that would love to reach out and say hi, what is the best way for them to do so?
You can reach out to me on any of the social platforms. On Instagram, my handle is Bassem_Hannah. On LinkedIn, you can find me, Bassem Hannah. Those are the two fastest, best ways to reach out to me. I respond very quickly, like definitely within the day, if not within the hour. Find me on the streets. Yeah.
Thank you so much for being on the Dealmaker Show today. It has been an honor to have you with us.
The pleasure was all mine. Thank you so much for having me.
If you like the show, make sure that you hit that subscribe button. If you could leave a review as well, that would be fantastic. And if you got any value, either from this episode or from the show itself, share it with a friend. Perhaps they also appreciate it. So also remember that if you need any help, whether it is with your fundraising efforts or with selling your business, you can reach me at alejandro@pantheraadvisors.com.
You've reached the end of another episode of the Dealmakers Podcast. For free resources and materials, head over to alejandrocremades.com. Thank you for listening, and see you at the next episode.